I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard to this Human Events Sunday special. We are very excited to bring on for you once again the man who is fighting the fake news media one lawsuit at a time, former chief of staff for the DOD, deputy assistant to President Trump, the Russiagate guy, best-selling author, the founder of fightwithcash.com. And I think he's got the shirt on for us. Let us see it. Let's see it. There it is. Fight with Cash. I was joking before, ladies and gentlemen. It's of course Cash Patel. So I was joking beforehand that we must have both gotten the Zelensky memo for the apparel today. You know, it's sweeping. I don't know what it is. But then you pointed out that you got to fight with Cash. So were you first or was he first?
We were definitely first at the Cash Foundation. He's just knocking us, but he gets more money from the government than I do.
So he's knocking off. Right. Because but he goes and does the whole thing. It's like we're gonna do this, and. You know, and even when they lose, you just get more money, which is amazing. I never thought they used to call that the sunk cost fallacy, but I don't know. So Cash, I had to get you on because we have just seen the release of the Durham report, and of all the people that I know, Colonel Harvey, General Flynn, Devin Nunez, et cetera, you were the guy, the star of the plot against the president. You had your fingers on this investigation in the earliest stages of basically the counter investigation into Russiagate. You put out the memo back in 2018. Of course, we all saw that. We had to fight to release the memo. It finally did get released. And then we all saw the truth. Now Durham's come out with his report. And I'll give the media credit because they did actually, they reported on it. There was actually widespread reporting on the Durham report the way that there wasn't really when it came to the memo. And I think there's reasons for that I want to get into. But what is your take? Do you think the Durham report did what it needed to do? Did you like what it did? Did you want it to do more? The floor is yours.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be back with you on your show. Look, I think you have to look at the Durham report through two lenses, political and then, you know, what did it do for accountability in law enforcement and the like? From an investigatory standpoint, politically, and I'm not the political guru, but it unequivocally stated that President Trump is completely exonerated from any of the Russiagate narrative that Hillary Clinton, the Democrats, and the FBI advanced. It also unequivocally stated that the FBI was never justified in launching the investigation in the first place into the Trump campaign and later the Trump presidency. Those are two pretty powerful message points that President Trump can run with for 18 straight months. And the reason they're powerful is because it alludes to one of the things you said. 4 or 5 years ago, the media didn't cover this, but they're covering the Durham report right now. You know, even Chuck Todd and that doofus on CNN, I can't remember his name right now, but even those people are saying that this is devastating.
By the way, doofus at CNN, it's like, man, you have to narrow it down a little bit. Probably either Tapper or Jim Sciutto.
Yeah. That's it. But Evan for Perez. A political perspective, you're speaking to an audience that just thought we have been lying to them as conspirators for the last 5 years. So that's politically valuable, invaluable. And I think he gets that out there because they're going to do it again. They did it with the 51 Intel letter, Steele dossier 2.0, and they're already doing it again. So now we've caught them and we have a platform to say, no, this happened multiple times to rig elections. From a law enforcement investigatory standpoint, you know, I know John Durham. I'll tell you probably for one of the first times on your show, I was actually asked to sit down in a skiff with John Durham for about a day and a half by Bill Barr when he was first appointed special counsel so I can tell him, as the guy that ran the Russiagate investigation and a former federal prosecutor, here are all the things I found. Here are all the things I wanted to find out more about but didn't have the authorities as a DOJ prosecutor does. And here are all the referrals we're going to make you for potential violations of the law to include lying to Congress, conspiracy, fraud, et cetera. So it was just like this dump, brain dump, you know?
Well, walk us through that for a second there, because not everyone in the audience, we don't know, not everyone has your background. What is the difference between your level of investigation and then the level of investigation that a special prosecutor had?
Yeah, look, two different branches of government, legislative versus the executive. And when it comes to investigative powers, the executive owns it, rightfully so, the FBI, the DOJ, DEA, whatever, all these agencies, CIA, et cetera. On the legislative side, you have constitutional oversight mandated to Congress by our founding fathers. Now, they do have some compulsory service of process. Everybody now knows about subpoenas, but it's different than when you're a DOJ prosecutor issuing a subpoena and impaneling a grand jury. Before I got to the House Intel Committee to run Russiagate, that committee had issued one subpoena. It's an entire 40-year existence. We issued 17 for Russiagate. We had to fight Paul Ryan to do so because he didn't want to do it. But when people in the Trump administration, like Rosenstein and Ray and all these people that I, you know, classify as government gangsters, violated the subpoenas, we didn't have much recourse, right? They were just like, we're not listening to you. The media is going to help cover it up anyway, so it doesn't matter. If you violate a DOJ subpoena, the United States Marshals Service comes and arrests you and throws you in jail and brings you before a federal judge. Now, you can ultimately get there, as the Jan 6 committee showed us, the power of congressional subpoenas, but you have to have the backing of the speaker to take it on. And Paul Ryan just didn't want us to do that. We found unique ways to seize some pieces of FBI funding and force out the documents that you saw in the material in the Nunes memo or in our report later. But that was a months-long fight we had to do. I even had to take these guys to federal court to get the Fusion GPS bank records to show the world that I wasn't lying about Hillary Clinton paying for it. These you would have thought would have been, oh, where's the FBI? Where's the DOJ on this? Well, they were in on it, so that's why they didn't use their compulsory service process. So John Durham had all those powers as a prosecutor. And this is one of my biggest critics of his report. He lays out like eight names: Comey, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Priestap, Simpson, Kleinsmith, and a couple others. These are the architects of Russiagate from within the FBI and DOJ and from within the Hillary Clinton camp in political circles. And he never subpoenaed them. It's mind-boggling to me. You as a prosecutor, the prosecutor, creating the investigation and how it's to be conducted, have targets of investigation and or witnesses of an investigation, and you just say, oh, you don't want to talk to me? Okay, no big deal. We'll just do it without you. I don't know a justification.
And it's not like they're, you know, they're just missing. They're on the lam somewhere. They're sitting right in their offices, right? They're not like hiding. It's not like Snowden where he makes it to Hong Kong and then he makes it to Russia. Right. That Putin's giving him, safe harbor and all this. No, they're just sitting right there.
And so from a legal perspective that I was talking about earlier, that is just a catastrophic failure as a prosecutor. There is no evidence. It reminds me of the new information that just came out about the so-called pipe bomber from January 6th. We actually have videotape of the guy, and the FBI hasn't done anything to go find him, and we have his license plate. This is akin to what John Durham did. You've got all the witnesses right there. All you have to do is say, here's a subpoena. You now have to come and talk to me. And if you don't, you'll get thrown in jail. And
I can't bury the lead on that one, because every single TV show you watch, when you're like, okay, there's the shooter, and all right, now we've got him on the CCTV footage, and he's walking into this tunnel. Okay, now he's getting off the subway. He's getting off the DC Metro. Okay, now he's going into this car. We're going to follow the car. Zoom in, enhance, license plate right there.
Yeah.
That's how everybody, we're told from mainstream media that this is the way the national security state works. When you're watching Homeland, when you're watching Jack Bauer, when you're watching whatever, you know, every single show that comes out, I feel like every other show at least, is about the FBI, the CIA. They're all doing this all day long. And yet in reality, which is what you're outlining for us, they have that technology, and yet it's the bureaucracy or this higher up level that is stopping it in certain cases.
Yeah. And it's inexplicable in the January 6th case, where you have an allegation of pipe bombs being planted outside DNC and RNC office spaces, and you have the videotape, the license plate, and where the guy got off at the subway stop, and you don't do anything. with Durham, it's equally as inexplicable for him not to seek out these individuals. Kleinsmith, just for an example, was the guy that pled guilty during the Durham investigation to doctoring a document and lying to the federal court in the FISA surveillance warrant and saying, oh, we're just going to lie to you and get this warrant anyway, and no one's going to ever catch us. He didn't go talk to that guy. Not only that, when you plead guilty.
Because do we really think that he did that by himself?
Right. He didn't go to court and trial and lose. He pled guilty. John Durham didn't secure his continued cooperation. I don't understand that. It's in every plea agreement. You will cooperate with the United right. States government. And when called upon, you will comply. And if you don't, we'll send you back to prison. That's what happens with criminals. And it's just inexplicable. So I don't know why he didn't do that. He masterfully put together a 307-page prosecution memorandum. But he forgot to attach the charging document on page 308. And to me, that's inexplicable. He owes Congress and the American public answers. I know he's going to be up there. I'm not sure when. I'm now hearing it won't be till August because they want to work through the rest of the Durham investigation. And I'm actually okay with that if these committees start subpoenaing the individuals we just talked about and put them on blast front and center so that they can do the work that John Durham didn't do.
Now, when also looking at this, is there obviously some play between, because he's a special prosecutor. Does the AG, does AG Garland have the ability to influence his prosecutorial decision or not?
Not just influence it. Per the prosecution regulations that stand up any special counsel, the AG is in charge. The AG can say, you can bring this case. You can't bring this case. He can say, you can write this report. You don't have to write this report. Remember, there's a classified addendum to the report that, well, I haven't seen. I don't know who's seen it, but it's not public. And I understand why it might need to be classified, but
just go check Joe Biden's garage over in Rehoboth. Right. Maybe it's there.
Yeah, his Camaro or Corvette or whatever that thing is. And so you are an employee of the Attorney General who reports directly to the Attorney General. And I don't understand why he, John Durham, glad-handed Garland in the first couple of pages. That's when I knew it was going to be a failure. The first couple of pages, he was talking about how amazing the DOJ and Garland and everybody was. That showed me everything I needed to know, that John Durham turned out to be an institutionalist, just like Comey and McCabe and Barr and Rosenstein and Wray. And he cared more about protecting the institution instead of destroying. This man, and I can't stress this enough, this was the one man in U.S. history that had the opportunity to destroy the two-tier system of justice that the far left and media have stood up and built over the last 10 years. The one guy, and he failed. So now we got to wait for 2024.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to the one and only Kash Patel. We'll come right back as our conversation continues here on Human Events Sunday Special. All right, Cash, you've mentioned it a couple of times already, but we have to dig in now. Government Gangsters, the book that we're not allowed to read, apparently. Tell us, what is the book and what is this current status? Because every time I hear about this thing, I'm like, I want to read the book. Now I can't read the book.
Yeah, no, thanks for letting me talk about Government Gangsters, my book that I wrote and finished in October of last year. And as most of your audience knows, as a former government employee, and as you know, you submit it back to the government so they can review it. And I agree with that process. They want to have a check for possible classified information and protecting people's privacy. Totally agree with that. It's a process that takes 3 months. I'm on month 8. I submitted my manuscript to the Department of Defense in October, or the end of October. So let's give them November, just to be fair. Mm. Let's say they got it in November. I'm now on month 7+. And they have not released my manuscript. They sent it to more agencies and departments than I've ever heard of. So not only did DOD chop on it, they sent it to FBI, DOJ, State Department, CIA, NSA. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Why aren't you releasing it? And when we did the pre-order on it, and you can go to Government Gangsters right now and order it, Donald Trump called it the roadmap to winning back the White House in 2024. And here's what I did in there. It's not a you're bad because you're Democrat and you're good because you're Republican. I think I call out more Republicans than Democrats. It's if you held a position in any agency or department and utilized that position to either get in bed with big tech and censor free speech, rig presidential elections, use the law enforcement and intelligence apparatus to unlawfully surveil Americans, or do any of that style of work, I call you out on it. And I show the people that were responsible for those epic failures and unlawful activity. And then more importantly, I go chapter and verse on how we fix every agency and department. And that's why I call them government gangsters, though, because that's literally what they are. They're people who are akin to the mafia on the outside, who embedded themselves in the U.S. government and basically crippled President Trump's presidency and his agenda for the 4 years he was there, because they took it upon themselves to usurp the Constitution and say, no, we're in charge, not the duly elected president of the United States. And we sued the Department of Defense in federal court 2 weeks ago. This is where we are. I have to file, get more lawyers, pay more money, and sue them to force my manuscript. Now, we haven't heard back from them with finality yet, but I'm hoping that this is out late this summer. But can you just think of that? You write a book and it takes 10 months for the public to read it. That's what they want. They want to cripple the book. They don't want it out there, because I call out Milley and Ray and Rosenstein and Esper and everybody else, Gina Haspel and so many others. And they don't want that.
And of course, you know, all these other guys. But in the meantime, by the way, Comey and McCabe and Strzok and all these guys, they're putting out their books left and right. And you have to imagine that if somebody, okay, just take Comey, for example, and he's got his novel out right now. He's like going to be a novelist, right? He's done with defending America. He's going to go write novels. It's like a mystery novel or something. Well, I'm very excited. I can't wait to read it. I read Jake Tapper's mystery novel, by the way, and wrote like an epic tweet thread of it. And then he unblocked me on Twitter just so he could read my review of Jake Tapper's novel. And I actually did read the whole thing. I composed excerpts and everything. That you'd imagine for the department. Okay, so if this guy is the head of the department, he's the director of the FBI, it would take much longer, you would assume, to go through his book if he's writing his memoirs about his entire career, because he was DOJ before that. He was SDNY. He did so many positions in government. You have to send it to all those. But it seems like Comey's book came out suddenly, extremely quickly. Plus, by the way, it referred to something. And there is a piece, by the way, in Comey's book that it actually occurs to me that comes up later in the Durham report, where he's talking about the CIA had this classified piece of information that he got from, and he was briefing it to Letitia James, that said that the Russians had information that Hillary Clinton was planning on using a false Russia collusion conspiracy to smear President Trump. And somehow the Russians had actually gotten intel of that. And so this is like the spy on spy stuff. So the spies at the CIA are looking at the Russian spies, reading their message traffic, finding out what's going on. But as you and I well know, anything that comes through CIA cables, that's OCS, that might be OCSG, that might be, this is very, very highly classified. Yet Comey is able to report that in his book. So how does he get a ruling on that out of CIA, we know the answer here, but he's able to get an answer on that out of CIA for something that clearly came from human intelligence that we more than likely, had at one point, this is what, 2015, 2016, in the Kremlin. So he's able to get source from a human informant inside the Kremlin that's able to come out in his book, but you're not able to get yours out just for talking about the Russian investigation.
Yeah, it's just, it's everything. It's Russiagate, it's Baghdadi, it's American hostages, it's agencies collecting information on Americans unlawfully, DOJ, FBI, it's everybody. And maybe that's why they don't want it out. And I'll give you one more example. John Bolton, former national security advisor.
Sure.
I think he's
right. Oh, Bolton. Yeah, the Bolton book. I forgot that one.
He literally just released it. He didn't complete the review process. He actually put out classified information. And the DOJ under Biden dropped the investigation into Bolton about classified information. And they didn't go and take his profits, because that's what happens. If you just put out the book, not only will they prosecute you for leaking classified information, supposedly, they'll take all of your profits. But Bolton gets a free pass. But when it comes to me and my book, look, it's coming out, governmentgangsters.com. It's on pre-order right now. I'm doing something never been done in the book industry. I'm personalizing messages on books. If you want happy birthday messages, if you want to me write out the alphabet, I'll do it. Go to governmentgangsters.com, pre-order the book. And as soon as it hits the shelf, we'll ship it to you.
That's correct. Pete Rose used to do that with baseballs. You could get him. He would write whatever you wanted. He would literally write whatever you wanted. But walk me through your theory of the case on here, because look, I saw this in the intel community on that side of the ball, that it's so important what you said right there, that it's not Republican Democrat. it's not left, right, because you've got people in there. And like I said, every Hollywood movie, every Netflix show, every what Amazon, Hulu, whatever the other streamings are out there, it's all the governments, the secret agent, and they're there to help you, and the spies are keeping America safe while you're sleeping, and Jack Bauer is killing terrorists. And you don't even know. It's all happening around you, but you don't even know what they're doing. Cash, yeah. What is it really like in there? What are they really all about?
Well, you know, when you specifically know, when you go into government service to perform what I say is the mission first mentality, that's what it's about. Where that process is lost is when you have these government gangsters come in. And I don't just mean they're cabinet secretaries. I'm talking 10, 15 rungs down the ladder below right. them at every exactly. agency and department. They get together and they say, no, we are going to violate the chain of command and our commander in chief because we don't personally like Donald Trump. So we're going to slow roll this operation. We're going to bootstrap that policy with destructive rhetoric. We are going to call Congress and say President Trump is going to destroy relationships with our foreign adversaries and allies if this comes out or that goes that way. And they get these agencies and departments to collectively grind the U.S. government to a halt because they'd rather see America fail and their ego succeed than put the mission first like you did and so many other people do. And that's not, I'm not saying all of government or most of government. It's a minority in government that qualifies as a government gangster. But this minority, unfortunately, has the biggest criminal co-conspirator in U.S. history, the media. The fake news mafia to perform their dirty work for them, whether it's Russiagate, Jan 6, Ukraine impeachment 1, Ukraine impeachment 2, I mean, Biden document scandal, Mar-a-Lago, whatever, yeah. right? It just keeps coming. The 51 Hunter Biden intel letter, it keeps coming. And that just proves to you and me and the audience, they're still there. We didn't get rid of them. And if you want to get rid of them and you want the FBI and DOJ restored to a one-tier system of justice, and you don't want the intelligence community spying on American citizens. And oh, by the way, did you see this? Chris Wray got caught unlawfully surveilling through the FISA process 278,000 Americans last year alone. 278,000 Americans were illegally spied upon through the FISA process by Chris Wray's FBI. And that guy's still FBI director. He is the quintessential example of a government gangster who gets rewarded in the media because we're all looking at, you know, MAGA domestic violent terrorists and people who are going to commit insurrection. And that narrative gets pushed out and these guys keep their jobs. So this is why I'm all in and have been all in for President Trump. It's the only way to get rid of these people. And
no, I appreciate it because, you know, when I was in the intel community experiencing it myself, and I would say, you know, they'd come and like, they'd sort of like ask you what your politics are. And I'm like, I'd be like, yeah, like I'm a conservative and this is what I support. But like, who cares? Like, I'm just here. I was a China guy, right? I'm focused on like, I'm like practicing my Mandarin. I'm like finding out what's going on in South China Sea, find out what's going on in Taiwan. And I'm like, why are you guys like, who cares? Why are you even want to? And they would always leave on in the middle of the day. You'd go in and be like, hey, shouldn't we be watching? I would always say this. I always bring this one up. I would say, shouldn't we be watching Chinese media to find out what's going on in China every day? And they'd say, no. You need to watch MSNBC and CNN. There's one TV with MSNBC and one TV with CNN. It's like, for what? Like, why are we watching our own domestic news? And I would bring that up and they'd be like, oh, this guy, he's trying to go native. He's trying to listen to that. It's like,
you're an insurrectionist.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. Now I'm insurrectionist. I'm crazy. And it's like, no, like I want to know what the Chinese government is pushing because that will give me insight into what's currently important to them and what their strategic objectives are. The same way that if you watch like Russian TV, you would see what the Russians want you to like, right, what they find important. Don't you think that as analysts, that maybe strategic intent might be something that we would consider
useful?
That's
too smart.
And so suddenly I make those comments and I got written up for that. I actually got written up for suggesting that.
Well, you know what? That means you were doing your job. People are always like, oh, where are all your government awards? I go, the fact that I have none means I did my job for Democrats and Republicans.
Exactly. And it's this cabal that when you get to, it's a click, right? It's like a click that when you get to DC, and this is what people need to understand, that when you get to DC, when you understand that the highest level are the government gangsters that you are talking about, they understand. And this filters all the way down that if you want to be on that leadership track, If you want to move up the GS ladder, if you want to get to 14, if you want to get to 15, if you want to get to SES, if you want appointments, then you got to play the game. Then you have to do exactly, you got to get in the gang. You got to get in the gang.
Absolutely. And they've mastered that art at every agency and department. And the American people just need to decide, do you want it to continue? Do you want the two-tier system of justice to go on, or do you want it to end? Now we've proven it to them, and that was the hard part, but the harder part is winning.
100%. All right, coming back, take another break here. We've got Kash Patel for the full hour here, Human Event Sunday Special. All right, we're back. Now, Kash, earlier this week, Axios.com wrote a piece, What Jack Smith Knows. What does Jack Smith know? So Jack Smith, he's a special prosecutor. He's wrapping up his criminal investigation into whether former President Trump mishandled classified documents. Keep in mind, this is the guy that back in 2020, Jack Smith, he was a prosecutor at The Hague going over war crimes in like Kosovo and all this stuff. And now, you know, they bring him in from the war crimes trials at The Hague down to Mar-a-Lago. And he's going to look into this question, as you mentioned before, talking about this idea of the handling of classified information, which you take seriously. I took seriously. We all take seriously. It is drilled into you from day one when you get a security clearance that you will take the handling of this very, very seriously. And I'd like just spotless record when I was in of handling, whether I was in the field, whether I was deployed, whether I was on ship, when I was at Guantanamo Bay. You know, you're using the pouches, all of it, double lock pouches, et cetera, et cetera. It's what you do. It's just what you, and it becomes a way of life, whether it's notes, whatever it is, whether it's conversations on the right phone, you know, are you on Zipper, are you on JWix, whichever it is. And so Jack Smith, though, they bring him down to Mar-a-Lago. And so the best line that I heard on all of this wasn't even from anyone in government or anyone who had a background in this at all. It's from my wife. And my wife, Tanya Tay, who you know, she comes from Eastern Europe and she was born in the Soviet Union. And she came in and say, the day that they raided his house, she said, oh, I've seen this one before. I've seen this movie, a movie 100 times, right? It starts with the raid and then there's the investigation and then come the charges. And so, and there's always some like, you know, there's some charges and it's, you know, the case is, oh, it's, you know, it's very, it's nebulous. It's whatever it is. There's, it'll be called some kind of corruption, et cetera. And then basically that person just goes away and you never hear of them again. And that's how they used to do it in the Soviet Union. And in that part of the world, it's kind of how they still do it in many cases. But here we are in the United States. And that's what she said. She said, I just never thought I would see something like that happening in the United States. She said, that's what I got away from. That's why I came to the United States, because this is a place where you can actually have opportunity and start a family and work and be able to have freedom and live your life. They don't have that over there. No. And in many cases, they have no idea what it's like. But stuff like this, they absolutely know what it's like.
But the tragedy is, and I'm looking for this Rick Rinella put up some great posts about Jack Smith that I really want to get to you. Apparently he was involved in a bunch of like nefarious activities as a guy with dealing with Kosovo. And Rick would know that since he was our special envoy.
He was our special envoy, right?
Kosovo and Serbia and brokered the peace deal. He knows about this directly and it hasn't gotten every coverage. And that's why I was trying to pull it up, but I'm not quick enough with my hands. But with Jack Smith and with
he actually called on May 20th the charges against the president of Kosovo phony. He said it was terrible journalism from ABC to just be writing these hagiographies of him. That's my word, not his, about Jack Smith, saying that they were actually phony charges. Okay. This is way, you're right. This is like way in the weeds here. He's saying, why did you do this? He's treated President Thaci, you know, very unfairly. He's not implemented the point. Our NATO ally Albania has a prime minister who's very upset. The Council of Europe actually called out Jack Smith's total political and phony investigation of another president. There are charges by witnesses that Jack Smith and his team used fake CIA operatives to intimidate foreign weaknesses. Okay, witnesses. Okay, I'm reading that right now. I'm like, I got to get Grinnell on because I don't understand what he's talking about there specifically, but it sounds like he's got a little bit.
I just wanted to highlight it for you because Rick has been talking to me about it. And I'm like, man, I don't understand all that. But what it does show me as a former federal prosecutor who did national security work is why is this guy who's knee deep in prosecuting war criminals supposedly around the world plucked out of The Hague and brought back to run a national security case involving classified documents? That guy hasn't been near classified material in decades. But the answer to that question is one that Merrick Garland only knows. He handpicked this guy to be special counsel for a reason. He wanted the Mar-a-Lago investigation run a certain way. And unlike Durham, who was not appointed by Merrick Garland, Jack Smith was. And he flies over and then he subsumes the ranks and he rolls down to Mar-a-Lago. And we've seen them conduct an investigation on a two-tier system of justice. When you juxtaposition what they did to Biden and how they've treated President Trump, America's finally starting to see yet again the Russiagate narrative play out before our very eyes. And if they go out and charge President Trump, it will be the singular biggest mistake this Department of Justice has made in its entire history. And it might just hand President Trump the presidency. What I'm worried about is it causes so many people so much angst that they go out to the streets. And I'm not saying don't protest peacefully, go do that. But we don't want to give them the narrative that the left is itching for us to take. And that is President Trump and his supporters are violent, MAGA, domestic violent terrorists. They've already written that narrative. They're just waiting for us to play it out.
When he was indicted in New York, you know, I went up there, I was with Gavin Wax, I was with Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we staged a protest. And you know what? We were right in the park directly across from the courthouse. And I said, you know what? This is our American right. We have a right to do this. We have a right to be here. We're going to be here. And you know what? It was so peaceful. And it was so just, you know, we respected every law. I mean, there was a lot of disrespect for Alvin Bragg in my remarks, certainly. So we were disrespectful in that sense. I was quite disrespectful of DA Alvin Bragg. But in terms of respecting the right of the freedom of assembly and the right to protest, yeah, we did that. And I think that conservatives and patriots need to do this peacefully more and more in order to fight back against that narrative and not give them what they want. So yeah. You can't let them make the decisions for you. We're not going to let Alvin Bragg and Jack Smith and Merrick Garland and the mainstream media make decisions for us. We can't do this. But I should ask you, though, just in general, about this mishandling of classified documents. I mean, this is such a non-crime. This is something where it's like, and we know every president does it. And I've said, look, you know, as conservatives, I think conservatives do get caught in this trap every once in a while or very too often of saying, wow, look at the hypocrisy. Could you imagine if the shoe were on the other foot? Could you imagine if the sides were switched? They would never do this. And it's like, okay, but they are doing it, right? Because it's not hypocrisy, it's hierarchy. They know that that standard doesn't apply to them, but they don't care. And they're never going to listen to you, no matter how much you call them out about it, because they're never going to. You need to have an action plan. And if you don't have that plan, like you're talking about, like you lay out in Government Gangsters, then you're screaming into the void, basically, as far as I'm concerned. And cool, you can go and do that. But as Admiral Bannon always gives us on the War Room, it's about action, action, action. But I do want to ask you, just from a legal perspective, this mishandling of classified documents charge, is this even something that gets brought up on a regular basis for, like, you know, run of the mill line analysts? Is this something that, like, would ever come up in any other situation for federal charges?
It should come up in a lot of places where the media has received classified documents, especially during the Trump presidency, to advance a false narrative. That's where they should be prosecuting them.
Right. Yes.
That's where it always fails to, we don't want to go after the media. And this was Rod Rosenstein and Chris Wray, two Trump appointees, and I'm very critical of them.
Who leaked the General Flynn call to David Ignatius at the Washington Post? Who leaked
that? That is classified information. That simple. Comey leaks classified information in his Comey memos.
The notes, right? The memos.
That's a leak of classified information. That's a violation of the National Defense Act.
Yeah, so true.
And those crimes should be prosecuted. But here you have the ultimate politicization of the law enforcement community, FBI, DOJ, to go after Donald Trump, who has two things going for him. One, he declassified a whole ton of documents on the way out of the White House, but shockingly, the deep state never let them out, and they got stuck at the librarian's office at the National Archives. I mean, in 2023 America, a librarian at the National Archives is telling us, I'm going to supersede the mandate of the President of the United States and not release classified documents? What are you talking about?
But which goes back to your thesis. They believe that they are the ones in charge, not the duly elected representatives of the people.
They do. And we'll put that one aside. How about the application of simple law, the Presidential Records Act? How is it that Bill Clinton is allowed to take sensitive information and stuff it in his sock? And every president before Trump, Obama, Bush two, all Clinton, all these guys, the law allows them to take what they want with them when they leave. And it is not a violation of the Classified Information Act or the National Defense Information Act. You know who can't do that? A senator or vice president.
That's right.
So if, say, Joe Biden, now the current president, has had documented instances of classified information going back 10 plus years, that was way before he was president. And what's the DOJ going to do? This is the breaking point for the DOJ. If they charge Donald Trump and don't charge Joe Biden, that's it. Game over. Everyone will know that the entire system is completely corrupted. And it leads to the overcorrection in government that we don't need. And I'll be the guy that says this all the time. People are like, let's disband the FBI. No, you can't do that. You need cops. You have to have cops. You got to disband a lot of them and reorganize the heck out of it and send them out in the streets to chase down criminals instead of political activists and political opponents. There's a lot of work that needs to be done there. But you get the overcorrection because the DOJ and FBI are creating the narrative in the media through their inaction that there's two tiers of justice. And so let's say they both get indicted. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe they don't want Joe Biden or Donald Trump to be the nominee on either side. And I've always said, and I still think this, I think Hillary Clinton's getting back in the game to run for president because she just can't resist. But the facts and the law apply very differently to Joe Biden than they do to President Trump. And the reason that you have a special counsel appointed is a total farce. It's because Merrick Garland wants to say, oh, you know, we handle this above board. Whatever they say is God's word. That's what they want. And it's a total preface. It's a total scam.
Well, the way that I always try to explain this to people is that the understanding, you and I were talking about classified information before, and this is the whole point of them not releasing your book. That's because you do not have what's called originator classification authority. You are not an OCA. So you don't, because guess what? You were, and what is an OCA? So an OCA is someone who's been designated to classify and declassify. Okay.
Yeah.
How do they get that designation? Eventually, if you follow it all the way back, it rolls up to who? The commander in chief of the United States Armed Forces, who is the president of the United States. So for them to say he doesn't have the ability to declassify documents, it's actually a complete reversion of the way you're supposed to be looking at it. No, the only reason that documents are classified are because the president or the office of the president has deemed them to be classified. Classification itself cannot exist without the president or the office of the president, because like a previous president has deemed it to be classified, or one of their designees has deemed it classified. It's a complete reversal of the way power actually flows under our system. And again, like, I'm not some like savant studying this. They teach it to you on day one, class one. That's how the classification system works.
You're absolutely right. And we're going to see how this plays out. It's going to be very interesting. And then Congress, I think, is going to have a lot more work to do.
All right, Cash, we're about to come back. We got one more segment with you. I want to talk specifically about that, the work that needs to be done. Come back. Human Events Daily Special. So, Cash, all the way back on November 17th, 2020, there was a an article that went up in the Harvard Law and Policy Review Journal, which I know that you read just as vociferously as I do. I mean, I'm just every single time I see an issue, it was Obama's. Yeah, he was the former editor of that. And then I get it. And it's everybody knows, like, don't talk to me for a couple hours. I'm word for word, line for line. But you got to look at this one that came out. So this is after the 2020 election, in the wake of it. So when all that hijinks was going on, that circus, that people were may have missed this one. They wrote, President Trump, on his way out of office, issued a Schedule F bomb. That's Harvard Law and Policy Review. And it's talking about the executive order that President Trump wrote on October 21st of that year. So prior to the election, just a few weeks before the election, Schedule F. And it says, for the senior executive service, the competitive service, the exempted service, for the way the system works now, the system, the bureaucracy, everything that you and I are talking about, the jobs that you and I formerly held, we fall under OPM. And the idea is that the benefit of the executive service category is that it enables agencies to hire when it is not feasible or not practical to use traditional hiring procedures, et cetera, et cetera. It puts you under Schedule E. It gives you this ability that you're protected. It's almost like tenure, right? It's almost like tenure for professors. This idea that this, I'm talking about the current system, not Schedule F, so that there's no way for you to be fired. A great example of this is Dr. Fauci. So people come to me all the time and say, why didn't Trump fire Fauci? Why didn't Trump fire Fauci? Well, as president under the previous system, he didn't actually have the authority to unilaterally fire Fauci until Schedule F was signed. Now, of course, Biden, when he came in, one of the very first executive orders that he signed was to countermand Schedule F. Cash, walk us through the power of Schedule F and what it actually means for putting the constitutional authority back into the presidency.
Yeah, and I'm going to do this in non-Harvard speak because I didn't go there or anything anywhere near Cambridge. Look, it goes to the heart of something I talk about in my book, Government Gangsters. Personnel, 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 personnel. And then everybody's complaint was, why didn't President Trump fire more people? And then why did he put in the likes of, you know, Rosenstein, Ray, and Esper, and all those people? We'll leave that other question off for another time. But yes, personnel is policy. That adage has a point. And what the whole purpose of and the drive behind Schedule F was because there's so many deep state operatives. There's so many government gangsters that have embedded themselves in the bureaucracies and agencies that run this country, that they are the ones. They are the ones that come in and subvert democracy. And if we were able to remove them, then democracy wouldn't be subverted. It's pretty simple, right? But since, as you outlined, a lot of these people can't because they've found ways to get certain appointments and certain job definitions that you can't fire them. But here's the good news. Schedule F is a great tool to help a lot of that. Here's the even better news. You can do so without Schedule F. Rick Grenell and I, when we ran the ODNI, we fired 10% of the workforce. We just did. We said, you're fired.
I would go through when, so I mean, I've worked out of Liberty Crossing 1 and 2 in the past where ODNI is headquartered. I mean, like, I'm just telling you, man, if you ever needed somebody to go in there to just hand out pink slips, like, please, just call me in on like a Friday, you know, and I'm like, I have like, I'll just go into an office and be like, you're fired. You pack it up. I'll bring boxes. I'll be very nice. I'll bring them boxes, maybe even a MyPillow gift, you know, something from Lindell so that they'll at least get a good night's sleep. But it's like, get out.
I'll go with you and we'll give out Trump markers and stickies so they can label their boxes. But, I bring that up because the point you're talking about here, it might be the most important thing we talk about. If we can't man the agencies and departments of our government after duly elected president is with the people who believe in his leadership agenda and want to follow the chain of command, then we are not living in the United States of America that our founding fathers have created. And that's what's been going on these last few, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. And so with combining creation of Schedule F to redefine how people can be hired and fired, along with the other levers I talk about in government gangsters, this is how we were successful at ODNI. We would call Congress and zero out billets. We would say, okay, I don't want that seat funded. Don't fund that seat. Don't fund these seats. If there's no money, there's no job. And the other
because the way the agencies work is that everyone's constantly trying to get billets, and there's always drug deals going on between agencies. So, oh, I got to fill this billet because if I don't fill it, Congress is going to take away my funding next year. So there's all of these, I could go on this for so long, because there's all these make work jobs, and that's all they are. It's about securing funding. It has nothing to do with actually continuing. And this isn't just the Intel community, by the way. This is the entire government operates this way.
Yeah. And just think about it. How many people running agencies and departments are calling Congress and giving them money back?
That never happens.
Everybody is like, oh, the opposite. You're going to cut a thousand. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. We appreciate that. So that's one of the ways, coupled with Schedule F. And the last way I talk about my book a little bit is also, you know what you do? You reorganize all the people that don't want to follow the chain of command, and you create the Office of Uncooperative Government Gangsters, and you situate them in Kodiak, Alaska. And you keep their SES billet, and you say you have 7 days to move. Report for duty. And they'll be like, well, no, I can't do it. Okay, well, then you can no longer work here. And it's totally doable. I use a little bit of hyperbole, but you can spread them out across the country. And the best example that I've been talking about, and I don't know if we're going to succeed on this one, but it's a good place to end, is the deep state and the government gangsters are such a problem. People are like, what do we do with the FBI and headquarters building? And I was like, this is the perfect example. You take the J. Edgar Hoover building, which is the size of a city square block in the downtown DC metropolis, and you shut it down. You shut it down. And overnight, you reopen it as a museum of the deep state, so all Americans can visit for free how deep state operatives actually worked. Then you take
they have this in Germany and Hungary and some of the former communist areas. They actually have museums like this.
Yeah. Then you take the 2,500 people or so that work there, which is like 25% of the FBI's workforce, and you send them back out into the country to chase down drug dealers, bank robbers, murderers, rapists, and criminals.
So you send them to the field office.
The FBI was supposed to do. And that's a lot of what I talk about in government gangsters, but it couples together well with what you're talking about, Schedule F employees, because you can redistribute the people, you can cut billets, you can hire people new and transfer them over to Schedule F billets, but it's all leading to the same point, personnel. And I've talked to President Trump, and I know you have, a lot about it, and saying, you know, when he wins again, are we going to get it right? Do we have the bench? Yes and yes. We've got the bench, and I'll have to hit on Ron DeSantis real quick. Thank you, Ron DeSantis, for running and outlining the hundreds of former Trump people that you now have working on your staff. Do you know who will never work in a Trump administration again? People have been asking me for lists. There it is. Thanks, Ron DeSantis. Everyone that has ever spoken to them and tried to help them get a job in the Trump administration in the past is now out.
Not only them, but the people who have also spoken to them and then endorsed them. You're out.
Exactly.
You're gone.
Exactly.
You're totally out. No, I love this. And I love, let me read for you the line, by the way. Just, this is how upset that the Harvard Law and whatever review got. They said, President Trump's Schedule F executive order might indeed be the most insidious, potentially dismantling the civil service as we know it. And I'm like, well, I don't think it's insidious, but yes, it is actually, that is the plan. We do want to dismantle the civil service as we know it, because the people of this country are the ones who are supposed to be in charge. The people that are elected as the representatives are the ones that we've put there for a reason. And so even Michael Moore said this back in 2016, that the populist movement, the MAGA movement, whatever you want to call it, it would not exist if not for the corruption and the malfeasance of these government gangsters. That is why this movement exists, because we are rising up to actually fight back. Cash, tell everybody where they can go, follow you, follow everything you got.
It's pretty simple. I'm only at one place on any social media. It's at Cash, at KSH on Truth Social. If you think you're following me on Twitter or Telegram, you're not. You're following some other guy. And governmentgangsters.com. You can pre-order the book. My children's books on Russiagate and 2000 Mules with Dinesh are also on there. We're doing some great deals. Go to governmentgangsters.com. We can educate our children about the complex topics you and I have talked about today. Nothing, as the left has taught us, is off the table, but we do it in a smart, fun way. Check it out, governmentgangsters.com.
All right, Cash Patel, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for your time here on this Human Events Sunday special. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore.